Hello and welcome to a new version of For Soul's Sake, a special type of episode. We're going to try and film a few of these, but I'm here with my friends on this episode. We're trying to bring spiritual substance whilst also bringing our friendship together in this special format of the podcast, where we're going to still have that same flavor of candid and honest conversations on spirituality, but we're going to do it from the perspective of bhakti yoga. I'm doing it with basically my two best mates. I've got Nam on one side, who we've been friends since the longest time I can remember. We went to primary school together. We've been through our spiritual journeys together. He went and did monk life for a little while, and now he's out of the ashram and living in the big bad world. And then on the other side, I've got Mr. Kaylee Woods, my confidant, all things musical, all things spiritual wellness, and someone that I deeply value for bringing the message of spirituality and bhakti yoga in a very musical, beautiful way. So thank you both so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Great to be here. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. We've just been laughing for the last like 20 minutes before we started this episode, just because we recognize that three men in a room together just can't keep it serious for long enough.
I have faith in us, though.
I don't know.
I have faith that the jokes will come out. That's for sure.
Basically, get ready for some belly aches laughter. Like I can feel it's coming.
If you're not laughing, we're laughing.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Definitely. But we've basically decided what we want to do is take themes from this book here, the Bhagavad Gita. It's a conversation between God and his best friend, Arjuna. And we're going to try and theme things based on a verse. So we'll choose a verse, we'll consider it, we'll talk about it, we'll maybe go off on tangents and talk about all things, I don't know, Marvel and sports and I don't know, what else?
Pilates.
We'll see what comes.
See what comes. But yeah, the verse that we've chosen today is from chapter number 7, text 16. You guys ready for this? O best among Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute. So there's four types of people that are looking for a spiritual devotional practice. Those that are distressed, those that are desiring wealth, those that are inquisitive, and those who are searching for knowledge of the absolute. What did you guys come for when you first like kind of were looking at spirituality, looking at bhakti yoga specifically? What were you guys...
Can I be honest?
Yeah, do it, man.
Mine was a mix of distress and curiosity. Because I think I was like, I got to a stage in my life where I was materially exhausted.
Mm.
I had tried absolutely everything under the sun.
Go on, tell me something, man.
Sex, drugs, rock and roll, everything, right? Mm. I think I started like smoking, drinking, all of that when I was like 11 or 12. So quite young. That's what happens in Swansea.
Well, I was going to say that's illegal, but it is illegal, man.
Yeah, it is.
Explains a lot.
That's what happened. I was exposed to a lot. So by the time I was 19, I'd kind of seen it all and done it all. And I was like, okay, if I've done everything and I'm still unhappy, then this is a little desperate now, right? Mm. I knew there was truth somewhere. So I was looking into Rastafarianism and mysticism and
occult things.
I'm imagining
him with dreadlocks right now.
Big, long, curly hair. I didn't get into dreads. Long, curly hair. Proper hippie vibes. And it was not a pretty sight. But I knew there was truth everywhere, but I needed something. I needed like a paradigm. He's gone already. Are you just picturing it?
I'm just picturing it. With long hair. Dreadlocks, like longer than, like taller than he is.
Like the Hobbit.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It was nasty. Anyway, I was looking for truth, and I knew it was in many different places, but I didn't have a single paradigm to bring it all together. So that's what I was looking for. I was exhausted, but curious. And I think Bhakti was like the perfect thing that could like answer those questions, you know?
Yeah. I love how it's like a mixture of two things.
Yeah.
Like, I think the Gita's explaining here, there's like four different ways people can come. But if I look at my journey, it was searching for truth, which was driven from from misery, from a very miserable situation. So I remember like, I think as a kid for me, I was always very philosophical. I live in my head a lot. I think very deeply about things. I reflect a lot, observe a lot. I never had the outlet though. I never had the community. I never had the outlet, never had the guidance to really say, do you also think about these things also? Mm, Am I just a bit weird living in my head, thinking about all these questions of life? But then I remember, like, me and my sister, we had an interesting childhood where my parents shielded us from ever seeing death.
Yeah.
We never went to funerals. We never went to, like, the Asian equivalent of a wake. We just heard that someone had passed away in the family or the community. That was it.
Mm.
We never actually experienced or realized the temporary nature of life. And so I remember, like, growing up, and until I was 19 years old, can you imagine, right? 19 years old, I'm working in Angel, in Islington, with my uncle, and we find out that my great-grandma, she's just passed away, or she's about to pass away. And she was, like, you know, she was in the 80s, 90s. We all knew. She was sick for a while. We all knew she was going. And I remember jumping on my bike and cycling all the way to the hospital in South London. I got there, all my family's there, and then she just passes away. Everyone was fine. But the moment she passed away, everyone was in hysterics.
Mm.
And for me, who had never, like, I'd never ever seen death before, when I witnessed that, it was actually quite fascinating. Yeah, death is not something to be... To be taken lightly, but I just thought it was really fascinating because I thought, wow, everyone just realized the temporary nature that life's going to go. We're not going to be here forever. And so then that kind of, for me, sparked this inquiry into like, what is really going on? I need to figure it out. Otherwise, what am I doing with my life?
It's so interesting, you know? that death or the ending of the human experience can bring out so much in terms of one's inquiry into the purpose of life. And I mean, similar experience. Like, I remember my grandfather passing away, going to the hospital. I didn't have a clue what death was at that time. And so there was a piano in the waiting room. And believe this or not, I started playing happy. It was the only thing I could play on piano was Happy Birthday. I had no idea what was going on. But then it's like you said, as soon as he passed, everyone's in hysterics, this overflood of grief and sorrow. But only at that point do I remember having dreams and even nightmares about the temporary nature of life.
Mm.
And I guess it comes with different people at different times, according to time, place, circumstance, and so many different things in the mind. But how death can be the striking, you know, almost like it's a gong that you strike and something clicks in you to make you think, oh, this isn't forever.
The Bhagavad Gita really discusses that a lot. This idea that the prospect of death can really bring you to life.
Yes.
And, you know, I was thinking this the other day. I don't know how you guys feel. Would you prefer to know how long you had left in the world, or would you want it to be like, you know, an unknown, a question mark?
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you have some idea, perhaps not, you know, to the day, but if you at least begin to acknowledge the fact that this is a temporary situation you're in, we calibrate ourselves differently and we find a new meaning and purpose to what we're doing, because we know our time is limited, right?
Like, I mean, because we mentioned Marvel, did we mention it in this?
No, this was before.
Oh, okay, before we started airing. We were talking about, like, Superman and Spider-Man and whatnot. It's interesting that as children, especially for boys, I think, we idolize superheroes, but have we ever thought about these same superheroes getting old? Like, they did a recent, I can't remember whether it was, Batman's DC, isn't he?
Yeah.
So they did this thing where there was two Batmans or something, or there was an elder Batman. And I was like, oh my God, Batman gets old and Batman can die. And it didn't strike me at any point in my childhood that any superhero was ever going to die.
Right.
So I remember idolizing this, that this is untouchable, that mortality is untouchable.
Mm.
And in one sense, it feels kind of natural to do that. There's an innate part of me that thinks, and I think that's has perpetuated into my adulthood, that there's something beyond the point of death.
Definitely. You just touched on two things, actually, and just got me thinking, because there's two things we find really unnatural, no matter who you are in the world. One is the fact that life is temporary. Even though we see it all around us, every time it happens, it's still a shock. It's the most guaranteed thing in life, but it's still a shock every single time it happens, because we just haven't come to terms with that. It's not perhaps natural to our innate self. And the second thing is to see that our heroes, or the ones we idolize, as fallible. To see those who are heroes and those we idolize as fallible. that things can go wrong.
That's
from
a deep
them.
Point.
Right? And we're always in search of this supreme idol, whether it's Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi, or whoever.
Yeah.
Fallibility.
A guru.
Mm. Yeah. A guru. We see that so much in spiritual circles, right? And when we see fallibility, it just creates shockwaves throughout communities. Mm. But it's still natural for us to seek some sort of guidance, some sort of idolization of someone or something. And I think those two concepts are very powerful, which we see throughout the world consistently. But then when you read the Gita, it really starts to uncover like some of those elements at the deepest level.
Mm. Yeah, because the question then comes up, if you realize your fragility and infallibility, then the question is like, so what's the meaning?
Yeah.
Right, you can't be perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
So that can be really troubling for people. And I think these four types of people that could approach spiritual life, they all are after that essence of like meaning and purpose, you know?
Yeah, four types of people, let me remind, including myself. The distressed, the desirer of wealth. That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. The desire of wealth is someone that could come to devotional service and spirituality. The inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge.
Yeah.
The desire of wealth. I would have thought the opposite, that when you lose wealth, you start having this kind of crisis of who am I and what is the purpose of life? But desiring wealth, how would that bring someone to spiritual? I guess when you acquire a certain level of wealth, like there's this famous video, I don't know if you've seen it, with Jim Carrey, and he's coming out and he's basically saying, I've got everything, but at the same time, what's it all worth?
Right. Mm.
And so, yes, we may desire wealth, we may accumulate wealth, and then realize that it was never about that in the first place.
Mm. Yeah. But what's interesting is, if you're fortunate, you'll realize that no matter the amount of wealth is not there to satisfy. If you're fortunate, you'll come to that realization. Mm. There's so many people in the world still striving for more, and it's just not enough. So when in the Gita, what's interesting is that when this concept is explained about desires, like no matter what desire you have, engage it in your pursuit for spirituality. Engage it in your spiritual practice. Mm. And through that means that desire can become what is known in spiritual circles as purified.
Yeah. Yeah.
It can become cleansed, right?
There's this, I mean, in the Sanskrit, there's the word sukritina, those who are pious. Mm. Like what you're speaking about, it's spoken in the verse, four kinds of pious people begin to render devotional service or will take to the process of spirituality. So you have to have some qualification at least to begin with. Like it's not that just because you're desiring wealth, you'll automatically become a spiritualist, or just because you're distressed, you'll automatically. But there has to be some piety.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, are we going to look up the word piety?
Yeah.
I'm going to look up pious. Maybe that's a bit better. So pious means devoutly religious. A deeply pious person is a deeply, devoutedly religious person.
Mm.
And the second definition is someone that's sincere but unlikely to be fulfilled. Because sometimes we look at pious, someone who's pious is someone that is very good in quality and very amazing and noteworthy and worshipable almost. Yeah. But here it's interesting. Sincere, yes, they have a sincere purpose, but unlikely to be fulfilled.
Mm.
Yeah. So piety is not enough. Just to be a pious person doesn't mean that according to the definition, you're not likely to be fulfilled.
Well, that fulfillment is a really interesting topic, because that's also something these four types of people are looking for, right? Whether it's knowledge or relief from distress or wealth, everyone's looking for fulfillment. The verse, there's another verse, I think it's either in the Gita or the another Vedic text. Because a karma sarva karma va moksha karma udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena. I can't remember the last verse. But you know this verse, right?
Tivrena. Mm.
So it says whether you have no desires at all, whether you're full of material desires, or you just desire liberation, then you should engage your propensities in something devotional.
Mm.
Because that is ultimately where fulfillment is. That's ultimately where your desires will find their resting place. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's like the nature of people today, is to try and find something that satisfies the senses. Mm. Like, I'm just thinking about an average Joe, someone that has no spiritual desire right now that's watching this, I mean, I very much doubt it. If you are one of those people, then just drop in the comments. It's me, I'm here. But most people are looking for a way in which they can satisfy the senses, because that is the definition of happiness in one sense.
Right.
Mm. That if I can just satisfy this itch, this burning itch of just the senses always wanting to be satisfied, then I'll be happy. And it's so interesting that you're saying that, including this verse, that just being a pious person, just being a sincere person, just being a kind person isn't going to cut it. Because it has to be directed to something higher. It needs to be connected to something that's elevated, transcendental almost. You can't get the itch fixed by that which is of the same nature of the itch.
Yeah.
No? You can't get rid of the itch from the same things that are made of the itch.
Yeah.
Einstein,
that's good. Einstein said a similar thing. He said, a problem can't be solved on the platform it was created.
Yeah, right? For sure.
You know, so, yeah, we need to reach higher. And effectively, like, this is what I love about the Bhagavad Gita, is actually how kind Krishna is, right? And he's not talking to a specific demographic of people.
A kind God? What?
Right. It is mind-blowing.
Yeah. Not a smiter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Krishna's saying, it doesn't matter who you are, I want to lift you up, right? From wherever you are. And we think being lifted up means I'm poor and I'm broke and I'm down and out. But actually, you say this often, some people are so poor that all they have is money.
Yeah.
And so Krishna sees, like, okay, this person is opulent and living an incredible material life, but they're not fulfilled. Yeah. This person is pious, but they're not fulfilled. So let me lift them up, you know?
I often look at if you look at the Vedic, the Eastern sort of tree of wisdom, and sometimes people say, oh, it's very complex. There's so much here. Where do I go? But it's sort of in my studies, I understood that actually it's complex and varied because the levels of consciousness people are at in the whole world are very varied. Mm. You know, they're variegated. And there's so many different types of people at so many different stages. That plethora of sort of Vedic wisdom and yoga wisdom is actually a very, very detailed ladder that doesn't matter where you're at. If you're, you know, if you're the lowest person in the world doing unabominable things, you know.
Which most of us are, we're just hiding it. Like,
which is most of the world.
Yeah.
Is most of the world. There's a place for you.
Yeah.
Whether you're a super yogi in the Himalayas, there's a place for you.
Super yogi.
That's gonna be my new recommendation for DC. Spider-Man killer, super yogi.
I love it. I mean, something that just came to mind while you're speaking is it's okay that there are different types of spiritual practices, and even within that spiritual practice, different types of cliques.
Yeah.
That's okay that the house has many rooms.
Yeah.
The point is that there should be a room for every single type of person.
Can I ask you a question?
Go on.
Did you always believe that? Or was there a time when you thought...
No.
So what happened then?
I mean, I was closed-minded. I think there is a maturation process that goes on in every spiritualist. Like, you'll see it, someone comes into Bhakti Yoga, into the Kirtan scene, and they get a little taste of some purification or some... they feel, this is... And then all of a sudden, they're preaching in that heavy... this is the way. You need to do kirtan on a Friday night at Om Nom, otherwise you're sinning, my friend. You're losing. You're not living to the fulfillment of your entire potential. And I think I had to go through that too, to get to the point of going, you know what it is? I had to even relax the rules a little bit in my life and recognize that I'm fallible. And in that recognition of the fallibility of my human form of life, I'm making mistakes all the time, recognizing I make mistakes. I was able to acknowledge that I'm not the purest person in the world. And then you can accept people who are also at different paths, different ways, you know, and accepting them for... You love God in all different forms, and that is the purest form of loving God.
That's such a freeing position to be in.
Yeah.
When you truly accept
that
you're...
I'm free, what can I say? I'm a free being. I'm joking.
When you... Super yogi.
Super yogi, yeah.
Super this episode's going to be called.
You're going to be auditioning for that role soon.
Let's lose some weight first. tell me more. No, maybe yogis do have bellies.
Yeah?
Yeah, of course they do.
No, but by definition, a yogi is someone that can control their senses.
Yeah.
Okay, so I do need to lose weight. Okay, back to the topic.
It's all good. We can make exceptions.
All right.
It's inclusive world. Yeah, I think it's super freeing when you are comfortable with the fact that you are fallible. and that you're not a hero in the world, and you're not here to like change the world. You're just trying to change yourself, minute by minute, day by day, little step at a time. When you're comfortable with that, I've got loads of fallible areas. I've got some strengths. Let me just be comfortable in where I'm at and know the next logical step for me. Rather than like, we see this a lot in spiritual communities. You come in and it's like, oh my God, this is mind-blowing, super insightful. I'm gaining knowledge, which is therefore increasing my ego. Now I know something those lot don't know. We see that a lot, right? With knowledge comes ego.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to give knowledge. So now someone else knows something you know, and you can't be the holder of that wisdom in the first place.
Right.
And so I think that first stage is a very interesting stage, and it's almost like a peak until things get really hairy and you just, everything dives and you understand, okay, I'm pretty fallible. You're going to laugh, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's this verse in the Bhagavatam that goes, recognizing one's fallibility means we're less likely to get hurt when someone does point out our flaws. That when someone points out, hey, like, you really have this big ego problem, if we already know it, it's going to hurt us way less.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real power in recognizing our flaws.
Yeah. Mm.
There's a real strength in recognizing I'm not the perfect article.
Yeah.
And it's something that almost like every time someone comes up to me at the end of a kirtan session, I say, I'm just trying my best. Mm. I'm not perfect, but I'm trying my best.
Yeah.
You know, Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada, who was the author of this version of the Bhagavad Gita, he said it best. He said, every time you point a finger at someone, you have three fingers pointing back at you, right?
Yeah.
And that was a game changer for me, because like you said, we find some truth, we find knowledge, we become egotistical, and we start pointing the finger, right?
Yeah.
These people aren't doing it the way I'm doing.
Yeah.
But that leads to such a block in our progress to spiritual life. So that simple understanding of every time we point the finger, actually, no, there's a lot I have to work on.
Yeah.
You know, if I can see it in others, it must be in me also. Yeah. Otherwise, how could I notice it, right?
Yeah.
I often like the analogy, and I know we've spoken about this before, is like spiritual communities are non-different from a hospital.
Right.
Right? So in a hospital, do we see a patient going into the hospital and be like, you're sick, you're sick, you're sick? They don't, right? Obviously they're sick because they're in the hospital, mate. Right?
It's just imagining going into hospital. You're sick, you're sick, you're sick.
Nah, it's like, it's crazy, you know? It's like, who does that? Oh, look how sick you are. Yeah, you know.
You ain't no super yogi, mate.
Yeah, you ain't no super yogi. Where's the super yogi? Well, he definitely ain't in the hospital. But in spiritual communities, we find the same thing. We find people going into spiritual communities and saying, oh, but you're not very perfect, are you? You're not very perfect. You're not great at that. What gives you the right to be there? And it's like, well, what do you expect?
Mm.
This is the world we live in. And the spirituality, especially what we're talking about in the Gita, is very lofty. Mm. It's actually a very advanced form of yoga. And the modern man or woman just, you know, is not a good representation of that. But we have a chance.
Yeah.
And we enter the hospital to recover.
I think that's where authenticity and being vulnerable comes in. Because if you see someone that's sick or ill, right? Say they've broken their arm and their arm's in a plaster. You're not going to, unless you're an evil person, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to laugh at them. You're not going to go and like punch their arm or something, because you can see, right? Yeah. You can see that there's a problem there. But with spiritual difficulty and obstacle, it's hidden.
Yeah.
We know people can't immediately see it.
Yeah.
So because we know they can't see it, we try even harder to hide it.
Yeah.
And that only comes back on us.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So many thoughts come to mind. I mean, you know, don't hate the sin. Don't hate the sinner, hate the sin. Healer, heal thyself. You know, all these quotes are popping into mind, because I think that, you know, in order to find our authentic selves, we're not going to do it by criticizing others. I think oftentimes we think that we're going to improve the situation by criticizing and judging other people's outlook on how they're practicing. And I think that one of the principles that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is like, we can call him like the father of kirtan, the father of chanting, he propagates that we should avoid criticizing others. Mm. And it's like the hardest thing to do, man. Like, you literally can sit in a car for 20 minutes and before you know it, you're just popping off at the guy driving next to you and don't even know anything about him. Mm. Don't know anything about that person's life. You don't know anything about what that person's going through. But we somehow sit in a seat where we feel the qualification to judge others.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most dangerous position to approach spirituality full stop. Like, it's, look, I've gone through it. I've, you know, practiced bhakti yoga and then looked at all the other world religions and go, ah, but they're doing it like that. Ah, they're doing it like that. Ah, yeah. They don't. But that's not helping my, you know, spiritual progress in one sense at all.
Hmm. Yeah.
The honeybee always looks for the quality of the honey, not the quality of the flower.
Mm. Tell me more.
Right? You often give this analogy, and I was just thinking about that. When the honeybee is, you know, finding honey, it doesn't really care about what color the flower is, how it's presented, how tall or big. It's seeking the essence and the fruits that the flower has to offer it, which is the beautiful honey that it provides. And therefore, or the nectar that it turns into honey. And I think many lessons can be taken from that. Whether you're a pink flower, a blue one, green, tall, short, spiky, you know, you're one of those Venus flytraps. Doesn't matter. Like, what are you seeing the essence? Are we trying to see the essence?
I can imagine going to someone, you're a proper Venus flytrap.
I always wanted one as a kid, actually. I remember seeing one of those. Like, this is gangster, man. But
I can't imagine describing someone as a Venus flytrap. Such an insult, man. Yeah. It goes right to the
Yeah. Just speak straightforward. Just speak straightforward.
That was below the belt.
But for some reason, we're not seeking the essence, and therefore we fall into like criticizing people, which, funnily enough, has nothing to do with our life.
Mm.
Like, other people's business has zero to do with our life in any way, positive or negatively, relative to the relationship that we have, right? Obviously, where it does, we can get involved, but...
Leadership, politicians, the government structure, we're going to bring them all down. Watch out, world.
Super Yogi is going to bring you that.
Super Yogi.
Of those four, I feel like... Could you read them one last time?
Yeah.
I feel like there's maybe one or two that it's a little more difficult to get your head around.
Yeah. Mm. Four kinds of pious men, women, persons begin to render devotional service unto me, unto God, unto the Supreme. The distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive... And that person who is searching for knowledge of the absolute.
Mm.
So what's the difference between someone who's inquisitive and someone that's searching for knowledge?
Mm.
I would say that the one searching for knowledge has already made up their mind on what they want to know about. Whereas the curious doesn't necessarily mean commitment.
Right.
Wow.
Curiosity doesn't necessarily mean commitment.
Yeah.
And we can be curious about so many things, as I am, and many of us are, but it doesn't mean we're going to take anything seriously.
That's powerful.
Because I often think, you look at that and you think, ah, the person who's searching for the truth, highest person, great, they should be admired. But it's the person who comes from misery, who has such a painful situation, which gives them often a much solid driver to commit to a practice and really see advancement in their life, than perhaps the others.
Yeah.
And I see it like that. And that's kind of how I see the difference.
One of the principles of spirituality in receiving spiritual knowledge is humility.
Yeah.
Right.
To recognize that I don't know it all. Or to recognize, in comparison with the vastness of knowledge, I know very little. Mm-hmm. And so when you recognize that through humility, then you have there's that verse, right, in the Bhagavatam. How does it go? Okay, I got it. Got it, peeps. It's from Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:18. Nashta prayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in the classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. Mm. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. The point is that I think that, humility, without which you can't seem to just grasp the ability to perceive spiritual knowledge because you think you know it all. And I think that that's why a humble person also is able to recognize all spiritual truths and appreciate all different types of journeys. And I think this episode has been about that, like recognizing that we've all come from different backgrounds. Mm. We're on the same path, granted, but that we all appreciate different people in different parts of their journey. Mm.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and it relates to the verse, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you put those four types of people in the same room, they're not going to look the same.
They're not going to look the same.
But like you said, they're all searching for the same essence. I think that's a really... That's a take-home nugget for me.
Yeah. I think for me, it's that this should give confidence to anyone and everyone in the world that this is for them to whatever degree they want it.
Right.
Doesn't matter where you're from, who you are, whatever situation you're in, you are able to access this and apply it to whatever degree you want. There is no barrier between you and your soul's nature.
Yeah.
For your soul's sake, ultimately, right?
For soul, yeah, for soul's sake. For soul's sake, let's get it together and love one another. Mm. Anyway, that's been a wicked first episode. I hope you've enjoyed this. Have you enjoyed it?
I've had a great time.
Amazing time.
Yeah. We'll be back, I think. I think we're going to do this more often. I hope you've enjoyed. Give us some feedback. Drop a comment below. Share it with a friend. Hope this conversation broadens and we bring more people to the table. And in so doing, help more and more people find their soul-searching journey and its fruition. And so, yeah, see you on the next episode of For Soul's Sake. Sending you lots of love. Namaste. If you love this episode, you'll love my interview with Keshava Swami on serving others and how our life gets ironed out in the process. Go check it out.
When I have managed to find that selflessness, that sense of it's really not about me, but I'm really here as a servant to give, then I found two things happen. The first thing is that our ability to actually really serve others just expands exponentially.